It's all good, man. Hey, welcome to Escape from Plan A. This is Teen and Steve, one half of the D-Gens. How's it going, Steve?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Yeah, thanks for making time on this, like, Friday evening. I know, family guys, it's harder to find some free time to chat about.
I have to find free time and free space. I'm in my basement again, so the kids don't complain. Because actually, my office, where I would normally do this, is right beneath the kids' room. Apparently, they can hear, so, yeah.
Right. So you go down to the basement man cave, and this is what married men do. They go into their man cave, and then they jump on the internet, and then they start talking about politics.
Yes. And by man cave, we mean the kids' playroom.
Honey, what were you doing in there last night? It's a mess in here. And you're like, we were talking about, we're going to talk about Sinophobia.
We're going to talk about America.
Talk about America. So here's the thing, why talk about it now, right? I think some of the things that I've seen in the past week make me feel like either two things are happening. Either we have reached peak insanity, and this is a McCarthy moment, meaning that the runaway Sinophobia that has captured both aisles of Congress, and Congress is where you see this the most, as well as the White House. But I think Congress is in an arms race within itself to prove who is the most Sinophobic of all.
Yep.
And I feel like this is a runaway process that has some sort of game theory aspect to it. I don't think people really believe what they're saying. And that we have, and I think TikTok was the sort of like jump the shark moment. And now Tom Cotton's talking about introducing basically a Chinese Exclusion Act 2.0, mm-hmm. which we were just looking at. It's called the Not One More Inch or Acre Act. A bill to direct the president to take such actions to prohibit the purchase of public or private real estate in the United States by citizens and entities of the People's Republic of China. And his tweet was introducing this bill. We can't allow Chinese citizens or anyone affiliated with the CCP to own one more inch of American soil. Look, that's Chinese Exclusion Act. And which is funny because, Congress in, I think, 2017 thereabouts passed a bill giving an official apology for the Chinese Exclusion Act. And this is probably one of like several bills that I've seen that in my opinion amounts to that. There was another
just
one that
the
I
same
think,
thing. Yeah, it's just yeah. Texas.
There's another one in Congress that wanted to prohibit anyone from China from enrolling in a university in America to study STEM.
Yeah. Oh, right. They were going to say, "Oh yeah, they should only be here to study like American history and like democracy and stuff,
yeah.
and freedom, yeah. freedom studies, freedom
yeah.
studies.
Yeah.
One thing that I think is important to distinguish is like there's kind of different streams of Sinophobia. Let's say I think there is certainly there's like just basic tribal racism, right? That does exist, but I don't actually think that's the main. Well, I'm not saying that it's not necessarily the main cause, because on some level you could argue that that's like the root of all of it, right? But that's only one of the aspects that I think is going on right now. The other is that I think it is the case that in America's conception of itself as sort of the shining beacon on a hill, shining city on a hill, the indispensable country, and so on and so forth, therefore American interests are by definition humanity's interests, come hell or high water, even if they have to break a few eggs to make an omelet, so to speak, then well, that's just the way it is. American leadership is de facto good and could not be anything else but good, So anything that America does is good. And there is somebody that is standing, potentially standing in the way of continued American hegemony, which by definition in the American mind is good. And that is China. And that is, if you accept the premise, it is kind of factually true, right? Not saying because I think it's because America's aims are functionally so maximal that somebody is always kind of going to be in the way, right? But that's kind of like a different, I think, pillar of the Sinophobia.
That's a neocon. That's right? The neocon pillar, what you just described there, the second one, right?
It's neocon, but, well, I don't know. Like, I'm not totally clear on the definition of neocon per se, but like, I actually think a lot of,
or like the realist
liberal internationalists. No, I don't think it's realist. Not necessarily realist in the
literal sense, but the realist school of geopolitics, you know, that says all states, nation states are really just, you know, out to grab as much power and resources for itself as they want, as it's able to. And it's like a Malthusian, it's a mini, how do you say that? I know how to read it. I don't know.
Manichean
struggle.
Yeah.
Not as, you know, zero sum struggle. And that, you know, China, this planet ain't big enough for the two of us. And that is, I think, the realist approach.
But I think like a realist would at the same time recognize that if its power were insufficient to achieve its goals, then it's just going to change its goals.
Well, maybe that's something that they need to confront.
Perhaps. This shiny beacon on a hill, this shiny city on a hill thing, to me, actually seems much more like a liberal internationalist position, right? Than necessarily anything else.
I think they really believe it, like a sort of.
It's a crusade. It's a crusade.
Yeah, crusade. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think that is, in a way, like this is a little bit off topic, maybe, but in a sense, the sort of colonization, the westward colonization wave, right? Started in England, hopped on the ocean, went across to America, started in New England, and then kept going west, and then hopped on the Pacific Ocean and kept going. And it basically stopped in China. It stopped at or just outside China's borders, right? 70 years ago, whatever it was. And that's the state of the world today. And that, because it kind of never resolved itself. That's the second pillar of the Sinophobia, right?
But here's the problem, though, is that those first and second pillars that you're pointing out have always existed, right? So why now? What is happening now? Because what I'm looking at, what I see, is literally like a runaway fucking train within the past. I mean, it was already bad.
It was bad, yes.
When did Trump launch his China trade war?
2018. Yep.
So it was already bad, you know, then, right? But it has gone exponential, I would say, in this year, you know, like it's March, end of March, past 3 months, it's gone exponential. And I think TikTok hearing was a sort of culmination of this, where we have the sort of like neocon type or neocon adjacent fear-mongering aligned with the tech industry that wants to sort of quash Chinese competition. And I think that it doesn't, I'm trying to figure out what is going on in the past 3 months that has caused this to go like an absolute bottle rocket in terms of the level of just insane rhetoric, you know. And then you see Nikki Haley, who's a moderate. She's a moderate, you know, she's a moderate GOP, mainstream GOP candidate for president. She threw her hat in. And complete, you know, just total, just insane Sinophobia again. Like her entire platform is, and Marco Rubio's going crazy with this stuff.
But is it just out of the question that the trend is simply up, right? Like there's going to be little dips
I'm sure it's up.
The trend is just up. So no, at any given point, we're expected to be at a new record high, right? So.
Yes, but why? Yes, it's up. But my question is, well, let me offer my
sure
feeling about this is that this actually doesn't have that much as it's not entirely about China. I think I think that the first two pillars you talked about were growing stronger over time because as a reaction, I think, to China itself just sort of reasserting, you know, bigger. Asserting itself. Yeah. I mean, there's that whole
Things are better in China and things are shittier in America since 25 years ago, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Now, I just don't think that that alone, I mean, I could be wrong. My feeling is that that alone is not sufficient to cause the runaway chain reaction we see going on right now, which is absolute batshit insane. I mean, they're literally talking like it's just like mainstream media openly reporting about, you know, like what would happen in an event of a nuclear exchange with China, and it's not even a warning thing. It's literally like an infographic of how many people would die. It's insane. And I suspect, Steve, that what's actually going on is that it's a function of an intractable breakdown in American politics. And we saw Trump getting arrested today, which is not arrested, but indicted.
Indicted, yeah.
And that is, to me, a sure sign that
of
total division, just absolute total division.
You could be onto something there because we are about a year away, right, from the election or something?
Yeah. I mean, they knew that this was a point of no return basically breaking tradition that says, like, you know, presidents are essentially above the law, whether we like it or not. Like, that the tradition.
Yeah.
And now you're actually going to have a former president go to jail. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and they're going to mugshot him, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like that is among many other things. I mean, this is just a sign. I think that what we're seeing now is a central government, including the moderates who are trying to keep it together, that they know that they're going to have to pass some very, very unpopular bills. They're going to have to tighten central control. And they're going to have to pass bills that the American public just doesn't like. Like, we don't want the restrict bill. Yeah, the restrict act. We don't like what functioning democracy are the people going to be like? Yeah, we want to make it so that, like, if we go to the wrong website, we are criminally liable for it. And we're not talking about child porn. We're talking about WeChat.
WeChat, yeah.
Right. So,
I guess by the text of it would be criminal.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess what I'm trying to suggest, and I wanted to bounce this idea off of you, which is why I kind of asked if you wanted to do this pod, is that I think that this exponential runaway rhetoric, Sinophobic rhetoric, is a convenient smokescreen. It has long been a convenient smokescreen to ram down very unpopular, pro-corporate, pro-military policies and make it and use Sinophobia as a way to fearmonger and sell it to an American public that has basically lost all of its belief and faith that and either of the political parties give a shit about us. And so they can no longer claim with a straight face that they're doing this for our own good. They're doing this because they're like, we are under threat by China and China is forcing us to do this.
So I don't necessarily disagree. I'm just kind of. So in your thesis, right, to force down these unpopular bills is to what end? Just simply
because they
social
need
control. Because I can more defense economic money or more money for the MIC. I can totally understand. Like, it's just a profit motive, right?
Yeah.
But you're saying that there is some, like the Restrict Act, there is some drive towards increased informational and social control that is necessary? Or is this a distraction? Is it like the circus part of the bread and circuses?
I think it's a bit of both, but I'm saying, like, underlying this is the need for the government to consolidate power to service a corporate and military agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And that's necessary for the basically like the survival of the system as it currently is, which has always been a pro-corporate, probe. Yeah. Hey, Mike's with us. We got oh, both. Cool.
Both degens are here.
Hey guys, yeah. How's it going?
Twice as degenerate. What's going on?
Do we need to catch you up? We're like, you know, should we tell you kind of what's going on?
Yeah, sure.
We're talking about runaway Sinophobia over the last, call it, month to 3 months. That has kind of like, you know, we were talking about Tom Cotton and his bill to ban any Chinese citizen from purchasing real estate in America. Things like that. Like just runaway and Nikki Haley, you know, everyone's just
TikTok
going crazy.
Hearings.
The TikTok hearings, like, yeah, we brought that up for sure. And my, we're discussing like why now. And I'm basically saying that a lot of this is not really due to China. It is. I mean, I think a lot is due to China, obviously, as a rival or threat or whatever.
Right.
But in the last month or 2 months, I don't know what has changed so much. But I think part of it is not so much that just China is a threat and we have to respond to it, but that what's going on is the U.S., the America itself is finding ourselves in an intractable situation where, like, the centralized authority is starting to fall apart. The ability to pass more pro-corporate, pro-military policies, which is the true job of Congress, as we all know, is under threat because people don't want any more of that shit.
Yeah, they're not buying that shit anymore.
They're not buying that shit anymore. And so the only thing that they're able to do now is raise the specter of China to scare a divided population into some form of compliance and acquiescence to the continued rollout of more money, more corporate welfare in the forms of $52 billion for CHIPS Act, right? More money dumped into, like, okay, we quit. What did American people want? They wanted Biden to end the war. He ended the war, and now the run rate for Ukraine is higher than what it was for Afghanistan, and they want more. And the only way that they can sell this thing is to say that actually China is one half of this tag team in Ukraine, and so we've got to fight both of them at the same time. You know, and so we're talking about corporate welfare and we're talking about more military spending, and they're trying to ram it down our throats because they know that we don't want any more of it. And so that's why, Steve, I'm suggesting there's been a runaway in anti-China rhetoric, because that's all they got left. That's basically the only plausible thing that they can do now.
See, I actually kind of agree. I guess one thing that I'm struggling with is like the degree to which American policymaking or American sort of like domestic politics is still rational on some level, because I actually think, you know, like the balloon incident, like to me, that was like American politicians glitching out or something. Like they were going insane.
Yes.
Like there was something broken, right? Like they couldn't figure it. It was like ChatGPT having a hallucination, right? Like something had broken. So I can, and that's why, you know, I kind of asked that question earlier of, okay, so they're doing this to what end, right? But I guess it could also just be because they have no other ideas, and this has just become like almost a Pavlovian response at some point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, China is a really, really convenient thing to blame a lot of shit on, right? And I think at least in some, like, if you just say China is the cause of all of America's problems, I don't think you're going to get a majority of the population to believe that. But if you like individually blame certain things on China, the aggregate amount of people who will believe certain things is,
yeah, somebody will believe one of those things.
Right, exactly. Things, right? Yeah, like yeah, I don't know the statistical term for that, but you know, you're going to get a lot of coverage basically. Like I was just reading this thing about the U.S. life expectancy, and it's how it's just dropped precipitously in like the last 20 years.
It's scary.
And apparently now the U.S. or the life expectancy in China is actually higher than the U.S.
Oh, wow.
Which is kind of nuts.
That is kind of
especially nuts. Since.
You're talking about like one fifth or one sixth of GDP per capita.
Yeah. And it's, you know, such a huge country. So, you know, that's a, I mean, that's like a significant percentage of the world. You know, it's like almost 20%, excuse me, almost 20% of the US or the global population.
Whereas the US is like 4%.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Less than 4%.
Can I ask though, as like the token Canadian, are things truly so bad in the States?
It really depends on where you live.
Because I feel like
bad as the rhetoric. It is bad. I mean, obviously there's a lot of anti-Asian violence, but I don't think that there's no easy way to say definitively, but I actually don't think that ground level anti-Asian, specifically anti-Chinese racism, is nearly as bad as what we're seeing out of Congress.
Okay, that I buy. When I asked the question, I actually kind of meant like, is life for the average American?
Yeah, that's what
really
I. That's
so
okay.
Yeah,
yeah, that, that's what really I took so you to bad, mean, right? And I would say it just highly depends on where you live. Like, you know, if you live in it's not even wealthy areas. It's just like certain industries and certain geographic areas. They just don't. It's just life is just not as good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But is to the point where, like, if you're a part of the political leadership class, you're just looking at yourself. Oh shit, we need to have a boogeyman, or we're gonna have a civil war. Like, is it actually at that point? Like, if they did not have China, would there be a civil war? Like, I'm not totally sure about
that. I don't know if it's necessarily civil war. I think it is a breakdown in the ability to get Americans to buy into more of these policies that fundamentally are not in our interest. You know, and are really about corporate. It's about corporate welfare. It's about keeping an economic system alive that is fundamentally not profitable anymore in many cases. Like, they need state support.
Yeah, I mean,
they need to socialize the losses of industry.
I mean, how many abject failures of the governing class has happened over the past, you know, since, I don't know, 2000, right? Like, it's countless. Like, all of the financial shenanigans, Middle East wars, fucking rising healthcare, rising education, you know, fucking corporate bailouts left and right.
Reduced life expectancy.
Yeah, the life expectancy is going down. Addiction is going up. Like, the economy, like, is being more, you know, all of the gains are accruing to the top. I mean, like, healthcare.
And they're blaming all of it on China because if you address the problem as a symptom of a broken system, they're going to have to institute reforms. But if you say that the problem is China, you can just triple down on what you're already doing, which is an ongoing, never-ending bailout of a private corporate economy that is fundamentally unprofitable, you know, without massive amounts of state support. And so, you know, like, I think CHIPS Act is like one of those examples of, like, you know, fuck it, we're just going to give $52 billion away.
I mean, that's actually not even that much money.
$52 billion?
Yeah, it's not that much.
If you say so.
Well,
if you
look,
say so. Try to get $52 billion passed in any sort of, like,
well, that's
domestic.
Sure. Yeah, well, I mean, we're used to
I'm telling you, the Pentagon budget's 800.
Well, so we're used to the monetary numbers, but this is just fiscal. Like, this has paid for by
Oh, no, I get you. What was it? Like, look, the Pentagon budget, it's 800.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, I don't know if that makes it better. I think that makes it worse. On the corporate side, it's that big, but then on the military side, you're talking about a whole other level.
That's like half the GDP of Canada, by the way.
Yeah,
it's literally half the GDP. It's maybe a little bit more, actually.
But like I said, Americans wanted to end the wars. That was a popular thing. They wanted everyone. Mm-hmm. Do you remember? Like, everyone every politician runs away from the wars that we start. You know, they run towards a new war, sure, but they're always running away from the last one to say, yeah. Not, like, who has, no politician now wants to claim responsibility for Afghanistan or Iraq. Everybody knows it's a loser. And that Americans all, you know, it's almost universally held that those were mistakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, very few people still stand by that. It's ridiculous.
And Iraq.
in Iraq. And so they're sick of it. People don't like war. And yet Biden ends this war and the military budget only balloons. And we are now we're spending more money per year at this rate in Ukraine than we are having, you know, saved in ending Afghanistan. And then they just want more because they're like, oh yeah, we need like double the Navy in order to, you know, contain China's naval expansion or whatever. Whatever, you know, I mean, you tell me if that's really about China or whether this is just, you know, a political class that, you know, has no vision, knows that it's completely co-opted by corporate and MIC interests, that the whole thing is a dog and pony show, and it has always been, to sell policies that are fundamentally, you know, against working class Americans and for, you know, corporate owners and the like. That Congress has always been a dog and pony show to trick us into thinking that they're on our side and that the policies that they're passing are on our side. And that whole formula has, you know, I feel like run out because the situation has gotten so bad for so long, and that now the only thing left for them to do is basically sound a fake alarm about China starting World War III, and that every social problem that we have is a result of China's rise. And hopefully we could scare enough Americans so that we can continue passing the same policies that we have been all along. You know, that's what I think is going on. This is a smokescreen.
So you like the idea that the elite class is far more anti-China on some level, I completely buy that. But what I'm not certain about so much is whether they, or the extent to which that they use China as simply a smokescreen for more corporate welfare versus the extent to which the elite class is truly just ideologically like, no, well, I'm going to be number one.
I think they're split into two, right? Because there's also the other side of the elite class, which has a lot of money invested in China and makes a lot of money in
but that seems to be like, that seems to be, I mean, look, that class definitely exists, right? But that class seems to be either less and less or quieter and quieter.
Because they're running out of options.
That's my point, they're running out of options. Money, right? It's generally not big tech other than a select few, like Apple is obviously, Microsoft to some extent, but Google, Facebook, they don't.
Well, they don't really have much market share in China anyway, so I don't think they really care.
Right, they don't.
They're more about protecting their existing market share, and they got the reverse
going on, right?
Yeah, but I would say that the it's underreported, but I think that the American corporate interests are quite against the trade war and the tariffs, and in fact, I think they're suing. There's a big trade group out there that's suing the government to be compensated for the tariffs.
Yeah, just imagine like Walmart and Amazon and any importer, you know, or retailer that does anything in China. They're not happy about this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably not happy about it, but at some point they got to understand that like the winds have probably changed.
Well, that's why they're not like going vocal, but they do show up. Like China recently, you know, just like last week or this week, had that big meeting, you know, and I forgot what it's called, but you know, all the major CEOs were there. Tim Apple was there.
Tim Apple. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, and, and he said a bunch of nice shit, and he, you know, to the extent that some of those images went viral and people were trying to make fun of him as being, you know, a traitor, but it really didn't get much traction. It's not like he's become public enemy number one because he went to Beijing.
Yeah. Cause everyone uses their products.
You know? They're probably tweeting that on an iPhone. So, hey,
but I would say that I think what's going on is that, they are quietly opposed. I think that industry generally, is quietly, you know, but powerfully lobbying against continued hostility. And that is a big force, but they are smart enough to recognize that right now is not the time
to be loud about
speak up against this because Congress has lost its fucking mind, as well as a good portion of the media. But that's also not rational right now.
Right, but that's also, I mean, that's also some sign that that class has lost power. Like, you remember remember Kyren Skinner? This is back in like 2018. She made some comment about this was not
the
even
state, the State Department.
The State Department. Yeah. She said something like, in the past, the China relationship was driven out of the Commerce Ministry.
And by Treasury, she said.
By Treasury. By Treasury. And now it's being driven out of
State and CIA.
Or NCIA and so on. Right? So there has been probably some kind of power shift within the domestic American government. Like, I think my general point is that, like, I really do think on some level that the American elite class, whose material interests are absolutely handled, right? Like, beyond a shadow of a doubt. They really just don't like the idea of having anyone who could resist conversion to their will.
I don't think private industry really cares.
Private industry doesn't care, but like we're not talking about private industry so much.
We're talking about the elite political class. We're talking about the neocon wing, right? We're talking about.
I'm not sure it's all like these are. I think
they're the dominant foreign policy establishment. But I would say that I wouldn't call them just foreign. I mean, there are moderating voices in the foreign policy establishment, but they're all marginalized and it's completely gone the way of
neocon. Yeah. But I mean, like, what's the difference between from a foreign relations perspective? What's the difference between a liberal and a neocon? It's like
they're not opposites.
They're willing to bomb people. They're not opposites.
They've never been opposites.
Like 90% aligned, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, neoconservative has never been opposite to liberal. Neoconservative, the interesting thing
right now is the U.S. foreign policy is not having the effect that they want, right? The harder they grab onto power and like try to force people to do their will, the less the rest of the world is willing to cooperate. Because I mean, I think everybody else outside of the political class and like the Five Eyes countries is just super skeptical of US intentions in foreign.
I feel like
policy.
The US has to resort more and more to just like blunt force
coercion
and coercion to get compliance.
It's no longer like, look, we're the shining beacon. What follow us because good things are going this way.
Yeah,
it's more like if you don't do this, we're gonna fucking sanction you or do some backhanded or backroom like. Stab you in the back somehow.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want that, would you?
I agree, because if we were really being driven by the neocon, view of the world and just that, I think that we would be a lot more sophisticated in how we're going about this. And, we would be a lot more strategic and, using stuff like TPP and coalition building and stuff to contain. And we would do it quietly and without making ourselves look like fools on the international stage.
Yeah. There would be more carrots and less sticks. I mean, like right now, it's all sticks, It's kind of.
Yeah, and we're hitting ourselves with them.
Yeah.
It's sticks that we're beating ourselves with.
It is all sticks.
And, who wrote the. Graham Allison, I think, who wrote the Thucydides Trap, the book about how, analyzing the likelihood that, the top power will end up in a war with the rising power. And there's I think it's that book. And there's just a passage from the book that I thought was really illuminating, which is to say that generally speaking, when it comes to, the realist school of, analyzing great power geopolitics or whatever, is that, they're rational actors, right? Like they're going to do what it takes to, but every now and then, you have a great power that does stuff that makes no sense. And the reason it's doing that is because its foreign policy is being shaped by domestic crises. Yes. Meaning that they're not actually thinking about foreign policy in, in a rational way, but it's just like a mutant emanation from a domestic political crisis. And it could be the result of someone, for example, starting wars as a distraction or as a way to consolidate power at home under extremely fractured conditions. And I think that that's what's going on here, is we are seeing an irrational bubble, a McCarthy-like bubble of anti-Chinese fear-mongering, because if without it, we would be nakedly, the deep political crisis would be nakedly exposed to us, and we would have to have like a real reckoning, you know, and they're just trying to put that off as long as possible. And I just don't think that is going to hold. I guess here's my one thing to consider is, you know, I heard in Zurich after, I know this is not the United States, but in Zurich, after the Credit Suisse thing, you know, after the SNB stepped in, that there were like protests where people were like, you know, we have to kill the rich. And then they were like vandalizing.
In Zurich, of all places.
In Zurich, yeah. They were vandalizing the headquarters of Credit Suisse.
Yeah.
It wasn't very big. It was hundreds of people. Okay, so I'm pointing this out because it was a small but very angry response to something like bailing out a bank, right? Okay, name me one time that 200 Americans have gotten together to just openly express their deeply held frustration over China. You know, and I've been to the Chinese embassy, and like I've driven by there, you know, in the sort of outskirts of Washington. And it's right across the street from the Israeli embassy. And there's nobody there. There's nobody there. Nobody goes there to demonstrate. Nobody cares.
It's almost like you feel like that should be a hotbed of demonstration.
Nobody's there. It's peaceful. It's a beautiful, quiet, almost suburban lane. And nobody's there. Not a soul. Nobody cares. I bet you if you go to TikTok's office, I think they have an office here in New York City. No one's there. But you know what happened the other day? The president of Taiwan came, Tsai Ing-wen, she came to New York City. And there was a pretty sizable demonstration against her. And it wasn't just, you know, Chinese nationalists with their PRC flags. There were these guys, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted it. There were these guys, white guys, with these huge signs saying, "We don't want your war." And he had a megaphone and he parked himself right outside. I think he was right outside the Santander office building in Midtown.
Oh,
he knew that she was going to be there.
Yeah.
And as she was walking to get into her little, you know, her car service or whatever, he's shouting her down with a megaphone. This is a white guy, not some, you know, like not like a Chinese immigrant that's, you know, hates Taiwan or whatever, you know, the stereotype is. Some white guy screaming at her with a megaphone saying, "This is China's not our enemy. This is a lie. This is all a lie. We don't want your fucking war." And he said, "President Tsai, get out of our country."
Wow.
And I was like,
you know, I really wonder,
like, leftist guy.
I really wonder if at some point there is an actual military conflict, not necessarily even a war, but if like body bags come home to the U.S. from the South China Sea and the U.S. finds itself in yet another war in Asia, like what the rhetoric and the propaganda to overcome that.
Oh, it would be overdrive.
It would be so hard. And I really wonder if people would buy it here, because it's like,
well, you know, we've already lost 17 sailors, you know, ever since the pivot to Asia.
Oh,
we've
really?
Lost two Arleigh Burke class destroyers. We've lost the nuclear attack submarine.
Oh,
we've lost
an
F-35.
Yeah,
you know, just from like crashing and stuff.
Not because of the, you know, direct confrontation with the PLA or PLAN, but because of accidents and, you know, whatever. And it's not like we haven't already suffered losses. You know,
I mean,
like
this actually just made me wonder, because, you know, comparing Afghanistan and let's say Ukraine, while the American public may be tired of wars, are they necessarily tired of proxy wars? There's no body bags. Not American ones.
Well, you know, I mean, things have happened.
It's just money.
But do you recall that the Russians, destroyed one of our drones? And did you notice that the media has just sort of dropped it? They didn't really.
I feel like that's kind of too.
Minimize the escalation.
You know? Well, but like, what do you like? I don't know. Like, I don't think you can whip people up into a fervor over a drone.
I think you could. They whipped us up into a fervor over a balloon.
Yeah, but but did normies actually give a shit about the balloon?
No, nobody did. Nobody did. Yeah, I don't know a single person who cared about the balloon.
That's my point.
A lot of it was tongue in cheek. Like, people are just kind of joking around.
People are just joking about it, right? Yeah, because it was kind of fun. It was so ridiculous as to be funny. But a drone, and it's like CNN's like, oh, they shot down a drone. They're going to retire, you know?
Well, so like without something like a 9/11 or a Pearl Harbor, I don't think Americans really are fully on board with any kind of conflict, you know? And it took 20 years before America realized Afghanistan was a mistake and Iraq was a mistake, or like, you know, 18, 19 years or whatever it was. And with like, unless China just does something incredibly dumb, like invade Taiwan, which I don't think they're going to do. I don't think that's ever going to happen, by the way, personally. But even still, that's like Taiwan. It's not like Hawaii or California.
Yeah,
or New York, so or downtown Manhattan. I mean, it's totally different, right?
There's another level of separation there.
Yeah, so even if the worst happens and China does invade Taiwan, like, what's going to happen? Is the Navy going to start just sending in sailors like in mass to that area and then start an actual war? You know, war that could turn into World War III and put thousands of American lives on the line on day one. Like, I really don't know if the U.S.
No, I mean, I don't think the U.S. is, I think in that scenario, the U.S. is probably not getting involved directly. But it could send more proxies, right?
Well, who would go to Taiwan?
You could maybe try and convince Japan to send some people or whatever.
Oh, hell no. They're not going to do
that. Yeah, I don't think Japan
would. You could try.
I'm just saying, it's a non-starter.
It could just be like, send weapons, right?
Like the kid, like the kid from, like,
hell and whatever.
Like the kid from Ohio or Arkansas that's on a Navy destroyer or aircraft carrier, you know, it, like, are their parents going to be like, yeah, send my kid to Taiwan where they also speak Chinese?
Exactly. Nobody cares about this shit.
Oh, no. They're not going to do this. Like if they're, I think.
People are already tired of Ukraine.
Sure. But I mean, look, the Taiwan situation is just the U.S. doing its best to provoke China into some sort of response that will enable them to crank up sanctions, to set them back another 20, 30, 40 years. But
Mike's bringing up a good point, you know, which is like, ultimately, American will, like the people have to have the will to do this stuff, you know, and I think we're going to let Congress get away with some stuff that doesn't really. I mean, $100 billion in lend-lease, you know, whatever. Like, you know, I don't think most Americans really think of that as like a real thing. We're just kind of like, I don't know, it's just government money. What does it matter to me? But I think when it gets time to, like, you know, actually having a material impact on American people, like directly, I really don't think that the ambient Sinophobia, which does exist, there is Sinophobia in the air. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's strong enough to support this. Like TikTok. I don't think your average American is fearful of TikTok. If they were, they wouldn't keep using it. And this wouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
They're not fearful of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's only a problem because everyone uses it. If nobody uses it, it wouldn't be a problem.
It wouldn't matter.
So you have like Congress taking this very sort of like paternalistic, you know, role where we're like, oh, we're trying to protect the American people because our children are too dumb. And they keep using it. I'm like, okay, well, I don't really see parents, you know, in mass telling their kids to get off TikTok. I don't see people, like, if Americans truly were that xenophobic, we would just voluntarily just ditch TikTok. We wouldn't use it, but we do. So, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I think the foreign policy blob and like Congress and all that, I think they're definitely in a bubble where they think the average American is just as rabid anti-Chinese as they
are. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
right? Exactly. So they just kind of operate that way. Sure. Whereas in reality.
Well, they have different concerns, right? Like the average American cares about like their job, healthcare, like and putting like food on the table and just like normie people shit. And the average blob think tanker cares about like feeling powerful.
Okay. But then there's this third group now, which I think. Like, here's the thing about blaming everything on the blob is the blob has always been there. John Bolton has been there since the 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, these people have been around forever. And it, you know, but we haven't gotten to this point with them, you know, because they are, I think just one aspect of the policy elite. They're not all powerful.
Yeah.
Okay, you so let me ask you this. Is the current level of, and I know it's very difficult to compare because it's a totally different era, right? But is the current level of Sinophobia not simply similar to, or perhaps even less than, I actually think it's probably not as strong as the level of Islamophobia post 9/11. It's just a different target.
I don't think it's anywhere near what we saw with 9/11.
No, like, right.
not among regular people.
Yeah, like, people were getting fucking shot at gas stations and stuff after 9/11.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Sure. But like, even just like,
talking not by crazy homeless people, but by like the blobbers, dudes in trucks, right? You know?
Yes.
Yeah. And people were like literally nervous, like just normie people didn't want to get on planes because there was like a Sikh with like a turban and they were like, yeah, no, I'm not getting on this plane. Mm-hmm. They were terrified. Mm-hmm. That wasn't even just simple racism. That was also real fear. That accompanied that racism. Mm-hmm. Whereas I doubt anyone was like, I'm not getting on that plane. There's a Chinese guy. No,
sure.
I really don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's like
it's not at that level. No. It exists, but it's not that.
Remember, we're spies, not terrorists.
Exactly. They're not terrified of Chinese people, man. They may resent Chinese people. They may find Chinese people annoying.
But my point is, like, your point that like the blob has always been around since the 80s. Yes, the target has just changed.
Yeah, they just move on from thing to thing.
Right? They just move on from thing to thing. And actually, if 9/11 had never happened...
That was predicated not on the blob, but on 9/11.
Okay, yeah, but what was right before 9/11? What was right before 9/11? Three incidents.
There was the original spy plane.
EP3 spy plane incident over Hainan Island.
Nobody cared about that.
U.S. might have cared.
You remember it because you're Chinese. I mean, most people don't remember that.
The Belgrade embassy bombing.
Nobody even knows about that.
Taiwan Strait Crisis, 95.
Nobody remembers that. Nobody remembers these things.
These are important things. That's because everybody got mind.
But they're not.
That's because Osama bin Laden mind wiped everybody with 9/11.
It was a totally different level of, you know.
Well, he really did up the stakes.
Yeah, I don't think that's where we're at. You know, I don't think that's where the American people are.
No.
Oh, speaking of 9/11. The new Restrict Act is getting a lot of pushback from the public in general. It's finally caught on that they're like this TikTok situation.
Patriot Act 2023.
What's that?
It's just Patriot Act 2023.
Yeah, it's like Patriot Act 2.0, and people are finally catching on. Like, the media is finally understanding that this could have far-reaching consequences, and really had, like, I don't think TikTok is even mentioned in the bill, which I guess, you know, is normal. But
maybe they shouldn't have called it the Restrict Act.
They should have called it the Patriot, the Freedom Act, or something, the Digital Freedom Act,
the Savior, you know, Protect Our Kids Act.
Yeah, Save the Children from China.
Yeah, like the names, the names of these bills have gotten kind of more.
Restrict Act. This is what I'm talking. I mean, I do think that, you know, the problem here is, I mean, the question I'm raising is that this runaway Sinophobia. I mean, I'm on Twitter right now, and Ted Cruz is saying that China is waging a 1,000-year war against the United States.
Okay, I see.
The United States has only been around for like 250 years. What are you talking about?
You know, okay. When you're saying like the Sinophobia has gotten more intense and crazy, like I actually kind of felt like it was worse before, because now it's just gotten to the point of like self-satirization.
It jumped the shark.
Yeah, like it's gotten obviously mental. Like we're in a Mr. Bean flick or something.
That's my point. I guess I'm saying that as I see this shit, it's actually making me feel a little bit more reassured.
Yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous now that, I mean, people who really buy into this stuff, they're like, you're just as crazy as Ted Cruz now. You know? And I think that this is a bid for people like Ted Cruz, who have always been seen as somewhat crazy. You know, it's those, you know, they're the ones that are going down this rabbit hole, not American people. I think Americans are still, by and large, just as we always are, you know, just somewhat ignorant, you know, when it comes to like the reality of our politics, like somewhat naive, but fundamentally interested in, like, you know, basically three things, right? It's like our health, our financial security, and our kids. I really don't think Americans give a shit about geopolitical this or that.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You know, and I think there's only so much. Americans may buy the Sinophobia thing to a point where they're like, oh, okay, we have a fentanyl crisis and an opioid crisis in America, and I have my community is being decimated by this, and you're telling me that it's China's fault? Okay, well, let's pass a bill to block fentanyl from China. Okay, so they do that. Guess what? Doesn't fix it, right? And so, and that happened under Trump. Remember, like he had reached an agreement with China about the about export of fentanyl. And so, I think that the American public will give it a shot. They'll hear it out, but if they don't see results, they move on. And I think that the what they're doing is they took the blame China thing. And the public kind of moved on from that, didn't really buy it, started blaming our own system again. And the response from Congress has been to
blame China,
basically
harder?
Go 100x harder on the Sinophobia.
Yeah.
And I think the result is just going to be the opposite. I don't think that they're going to whip the crowd up into a frenzy. The crowd is going to recognize that this is deflection away from the things that they actually care about. That is my prediction, and I think that is probably going to happen. I don't think we're going to war with China is what I'm saying.
Oh no, I don't certainly not directly. Indirectly, yeah. We're already there.
I think the days of this just constant re-raising of tensions and rhetoric is there's a natural endpoint to it. It's going to peak and then it's going to turn around. I don't think we can keep going down this route, but I am raising it because I think that's the only other option.
So the interesting thing is when the CHIPS Act got passed and like all of the semiconductor sanctions got passed, I don't think China really retaliated, did they? Like they didn't
no,
do
they
anything
did they did not.
Overt other than like issues and press releases. So I don't, I get the feeling that this is just a feeling that China is, you know, the CCP is like got kind of a cooler head right now. Like they kind of understand what's going on and they know that like retaliating tit for tat is not really a winning strategy.
There was actually a 1-year exemption in the CHIPS Act, the thing you were talking about, right? Was restricting Netherlands and Japan and South Korea. And
yeah, there's exemptions. And also it hurts American, Japanese, and European businesses because they were making tons
right.
of money selling all this
money.
Shit.
In Korean, that's why there's that 1-year exemption, right? So they're probably just like, okay, well, we're just going to buy the shit out of everything.
Have you seen the
year.
Results out of Korea for Hynix and Samsung? And they're
that's
just
probably
like
wild,
They're down. It's down like double-digit percentage points over last year because they can't export to China anymore.
Yeah, and they can't manufacture there.
Yeah.
So it's like you get rid of their revenue and their manufacturing base.
it's not tenable. They're,
it's
like,
not
Korea's,
great.
Korea's going to have to backtrack on this CHIPS Act thing. Yeah. Because remember that like they signed an agreement, basically, like they're going to work with the U.S. and Japan to sort of like isolate China. And they're like, 1 year in and it's like, the Korean semiconductor industry is like collapsing.
I mean, they never wanted to do that, right?
He's
an idiot.
The ASML machines are like $400 million a pop. So like...
yeah, Netherlands is not a big place. So.
Yeah, so it's like, dude, if you restrict even half dozen, that's like billions and billions of dollars. That just doesn't flow through not just Netherlands, but all their, you know, supplier countries and firms and all that stuff. So it's, I mean, it's a huge deal.
I think ASML's, you know, sort of PR people are going to say what they need to say to look like they're going along with all of this crazy Sinophobia shit because they don't want to upset the powers that be in their own country. But I think they're definitely lobbying as much as they can to get rid of these nonsense trade barriers. And they want to sell.
Actually,
if they can, they want to sell to China if they can.
Yeah, of course. I've actually heard like I don't know. Like I haven't seen it firsthand, but I've heard like the ASML CEO is just repeatedly said, yeah, if you just stop us from selling to them, we're going to make less money, and B, they're going to get to it anyway.
Yeah.
They're going to just make it themselves.
It's not fucking magic.
Like some days,
yeah, a lot of U.S. like trade policy is predicated on the fact that, oh, China will never be able to do this on their own. Which just
see, I was thinking about this earlier, lately. Like I feel like, you know, maybe 15, 20 years ago, the same thing was said about Chinese car manufacturing. Right? That they'll like just never get there.
Yeah, those are just the ground rules. Like it's just an assumption that we're gonna do stuff because China is like incapable of X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, it's kind of this like baseline assumption that they just could never do it without
America. Yeah. Like they're Chinese. What do you like?
Yeah.
Like and this totally ignores the fact that Taiwan calls themselves the Republic of China and they're the fucking preeminent chip maker in the world. You know, it's like it just doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, though now it's like we're, you know, the difference between now and then, like then being like, you know, when we just were dealing with the sort of like ambient kind of lukewarm, you know, a little bit antagonistic, a little bit cooperative with China or whatever, is that we've gone all in, right? We've gone all in on this existential confrontation with China. China is not folding the hand. They're calling. In fact, it seems like they're raising, you know, with what's going on with BRICS and everything. And
yeah, they're making moves.
Yeah, they're making moves. They're raising into the pot, into the hand.
Yeah.
And the question is, does the U.S. actually go all in and lose everything? Or do we back down? And I think that we're going to have to back down. I don't think we have what it takes to stick this hand out. Cause one, we have a losing hand.
But what is the U.S. going to lose here?
We are going to destroy our own economy.
Right. But how does banning TikTok necessarily do that? Right.
I think it's TikTok. I don't think TikTok's kind of a sideshow.
Yeah.
I agree, but I'm just saying, like, is there anything necessarily that is linked? Like, how much is linking the state of the American economy to sort of the current political Sinophobia and whatever actual concrete action?
If you start passing stuff like Chinese capital cannot enter the United States,
mm-hmm.
We are going to start seizing Chinese assets the way that we seized Russian assets.
Okay, yeah. That one I actually think will never happen. Well, not never,
see,
but
there,
like the
red
bar
lines
for that
we won't cross.
The bar for that is like super high.
Yeah, that's my point. We went all in on Russia. We went all in on Russia, and I don't know if all the cards have been put down yet, but our hand's not looking great, and that's Russia. Which is a much smaller economy than us.
To go like,
yeah,
you know. So.
Whereas we're dealing with China, which in a real basis is a larger economy than us. I think that the United States is still driven enough by corporate interests that the corporate interests will eventually and very soon reassert themselves and be like, people, you need to stop. Like, first of all, remember who pays your fucking bills, Congress. I do. All of you need to fucking stop. I think that's going to be the most likely result of all this. I don't think we're going to World War III.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Russian sanctions is that it basically just gave China more energy, commodities, and food.
Yeessentially.
So it's like squeezing air in a balloon. It's just going to move somewhere else. Like all that oil and all that.
It was a huge win for China.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Because they didn't actually do anything to precipitate this windfall.
No. Now, China basically gets like a locked in captive energy supplier and has agriculture deals in Siberia now.
Yeah.
And has the West completely distracted by a war really, really quite far from its border. So it's not exactly worried about Ukraine spilling over to China.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they've locked in energy and food and mineral supply for who knows how long.
For the next 40 years or
whatever. Yeah, for the next few decades. And there's like all these people who are skeptical of the fact that they could build a pipeline or get ships to cargo ships to like, not cargo, but tanker ships to get oil and LNG and all this stuff over to China. But I mean, it's happening.
Yeah. I mean, like whoever was skeptical of China's ability to build an oil pipeline into Russia, that's kind of dumb. That's like a dumb thing to be skeptical of.
Yeah. They could build it. Yeah. And until they do, like, they have ships, right? Like there's tankers. So it's.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the only thing that could really stop it is if 100% of the imports were coming in on tankers, and then the U.S. blockaded all of the sea lanes that supply China.
Such a wild escalation, right? That it seems, at least at this point, unfathomable.
I think if you take the temperature of people who actually have power, and I'm not talking about Congress, which is it's a dog and pony show. I'm talking about the people with the money, with the authority, that in private they're just totally like, what are these people doing? Every time when they see Ted Cruz talking about a 1,000-year war, they're like, dude, how are we going to shut this guy up? Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think that we're all on board. I think what's going on though is that people are a little bit intimidated by the ferocity of it, and they don't want to be ganged up on by a bunch of like frothing crazy people in Congress. Remember, this is an institution to which George Santos got elected. These are not normal people. These are crazy narcissists. And it's very hard, you know, when they get off script, you know, it's not easy to herd them back onto script. And I think basically what happened is we had a runaway process here because the job that you know, the corporate interests enlist Congress for, which, by the way, Congress, you know, I think we can agree. Congress does not represent the U.S., the American people. Congress is hired Congress is hired by corporate interests and other such interests like the military to sell the American people on policies that are not good for us, that are fundamentally in the interests of Congress's patrons, not their constituents, right? It's going the other way.
It's flipped.
They don't represent us. They're selling to us, right? And I think that this is a thing where the frontline salespeople are like, dude, it's brutal. You want me to what? You want me to sell them on another $100 billion to Ukraine? You want me to sell them on a $52 billion corporate giveaway to Intel? They're like, what? This is asking too much. And I think that what they've done now is like the crazies are like, okay, well, I've got a plan. This is like Glengarry Glen Ross. And Alec Baldwin shows up, you know, and he opens his little thing. And it's just, you know, fucking epic times. You know, he's got epic times and Falun Gong shit, and he was just like, it takes brass balls to sell the American people. And you gotta call all these people up tell them that the Chinese are waging a 1,000-year war. Are you ready to sign?
That was actually a wild tweet, like the 1,000-year war tweet.
Yeah.
That was actually kind of...
These are desperate salespeople.
Kind of hilarious.
That's the end of part one of this week's episode. Part two will be available on our Patreon feed. If you want to support the Patreon, go to patreon.com/planamag.